The mere thought was enough to overpower me, and I entered one of the irresistible tunnels, which was huge and bright, and lined with impressive columns on either side, and above and below. Peering through the columns as I traveled along, I saw the scenery spread out infinitely, and I could have taken any of those side-opening pathways and entered a new heaven of staggering diversity and wonder. People here could spend eternity exploring these fantastic heavenly universes, experiencing their never-ending joys and freedoms, not getting tired or bored for a single moment. I found myself accelerating through the vaulted tunnels. Occasionally, I drifted past hosts of heavenly creatures like schools of fish, rejoicing in song. On all sides, new realms opened up like galaxies. I glanced into openings into other worlds, each one as vast as the one I traveled through, promising unimaginable pleasures. I was lured from all sides by fine soprano voices, which combined with all the other joyous songs, creating a complete symphony. It was surely here, I mused, that our great earthly composers received their inspiration. 204. But I sailed straight on, past all of these temptations, which could not satisfy my hope that there was something more profound than this. Suddenly there was a pull from another direction. It was I, myself. I realized that I had been seduced by a dream, a mere wish, which was only a thought, a possibility, and that reality was far more than this. I was back in the temple. The voice spoke to me again, softly, gently, as if not to disturb my contemplation. You are right. This world is a grand illusion, put in your path to trick you, to keep you fascinated and imprisoned as a limited being. Yet to many people on earth, what you've just seen is the dream of all dreams come true, the heaven of all heavens. And indeed, compared to life on the dense earth, this truly is paradise, where people spend millennia exploring the vast scope and vistas of heaven and its joys. The voice now sounded more human and very close by. I was being guided by a very old friend, who faded in and out of my vision. One moment it was a brilliant orb of light, and the next a beautiful face materialized, sculpted by a serene sense of humor, boundless compassion and love. Then it faded again, revealing itself as a presence, extending and merging with the surrounding world. The stillness and peace that followed was an indication that something was going to happen. Then I noticed that the silence was not silence at all, but was a sound I had had no facility to hear before. A deep boom gave me to understand immediately that all I had seen so far was child's play, that it was time to wake up out of my dream and embrace reality. The inner core of reality, same event continuing until now. We have been dealing with dimensions, which, although difficult to describe or imagine, are still within the realms of our human experience, a mental realm. The difficulty we are faced with in reaching into the dimensions beyond are that we are leaving the realms of knowledge, imagination, thinking and understanding. In short, description is simply impossible, because we are dealing with consciousness that transcends underscore our human experience. Until now, conventional thinking has served us well as part of our evolutional development. We have learned to refine it to such a 23 om is a mantra used in Eastern mysticism, the sound of creation. 205. The presence near me reassured me that I was safe, but that I was embarking on a new dimension altogether for which there was no precedence. The sound I heard was like the OM23. I had used it in the past while out of my body, and now I realized why it had always had such a powerful effect. But this was far, far more. It was the sound itself making the sound, which was itself. What happened next was to challenge my human comprehension to its limits. This was in unknown territory. I relied on the presence, which was not human, yet like an old friend, a mother and father combined dash to guide me. It was an incredibly intimate experience, and I was aware of it in my soul. I felt trust, absolute and unconditional, so much so that I offered myself in total surrender to the presence. degree that we are able to manifest the most sublime concepts of our intellect and weave structures of incredible complexities, resulting in the most fascinating and uplifting earthly and mental heavens imaginable. To reach beyond all this, the mind is nothing but a burden and an obstacle. In order to get close to our true nature, all form of thought must perish, and with it our identity as limited human entities. In its place, a new illuminated mind takes up position. At the basis of all conventional thinking is an awareness of the finite. Our mind is simply incapable of comprehending anything outside its own nature. Although we may have words for it like eternity, infinity, God, universal consciousness and their like, they will never provide a true insight into states of consciousness which go beyond thinking. This is the very reason why the Buddha is silent. This should not distract us from the fact that this is a natural state of consciousness which lies at the heart of all of us, in our innermost being. As such, it can be called upon by way of attention. And we don't have to be great sages to claim our natural heritage, as the following experience will illustrate. The difficulty, though, remains. It is almost impossible to convey something that is beyond thoughts, word and our general means of communication. In order to convey the experience, all I am left with are roundabout descriptions of symptoms, residues I was left with, and it is only these I can convey. This is as far as I can go. 206. The world around me faded. The sound transmuted into the breaking surf of ocean waves. It was boom. I stood on the shores of a vast and glorious ocean. Real ocean waves are made of atoms and light. This ocean was just pure light in essence, as was the sandy beach, and the waves came rolling in towards me as gigantic mountains of crashing light, overwhelming me completely. But to put it like this is to do it a tremendous injustice, because words cannot describe the transformation which took place inside me as these energies burst into creation and into life, submerging and dissolving me in the process. But these are the limits of my words, and you, the reader, will have to search deep within yourself to perhaps recall the distant memory when you too bathed in the water of life before you were born into earthly existence. There was no fear, because there was only light, and the waves that rolled towards me crashed through me, lifting me into an unknown ecstasy. There was no letting up. Wave after wave rolled over me, and when I thought I could stand no more, a greater joy swallowed me up and carried me with it into lands of bliss. But as I said, this was not a place for words. Words belong to a far lower level of consciousness than even thought, and I had left thoughts long behind in a universe which appeared now like dense darkness of ignorance in comparison to this. Thoughts are simply of a nature too gross, I realized, too coarse to touch the fabric of the matter, tearing and hammering at my soul. There were universes upon universes, each one created by a crashing wave and each one ripped away and destroyed by the next. There was no repetition of universes, everything was new at every moment. I then realized that everything that had happened was a process of purification of cosmic proportions. When the tide ebbed away, there was immense peace. Nothing stirred, nothing interrupted it. Until now I had always been aware in my life of potentiality. This was potential realized to perfection. But there was far, far more. All stress, all need and want had gone, everything I had strived for had found fulfillment. Whatever I wanted lay there before me in its absolute essence, in total stillness and emptiness combined. But again, of course, the word, 207 emptiness is wrong. I had ceased to be. This was unformed, an unmanifested thrill. Until now I had been bathed in something which could be understood as the cradle or essence of love, but this was far beyond that. It was a super-dimension of choiceless love, which was as clear as crystal. All remotely human feelings had been stripped from it and replenished with utter purity. It was pure intelligence, pure consciousness. It was reality in essence. I knew everything, because I was everything. No instrument of knowledge was needed, because all instrumentality was my own creation. No creation was necessary. I am what I am, I am. I am all. Every one of us can make these statements. We, as a species, are at the heart of creation in essence. Being is at the heart of reality throughout all dimensions and is contained in every moment. It is here in its essence to be recalled at a moment's notice, no matter where we are, because it is the very blood in our veins. Here, stripped of all that I called myself, I was at the heart of nature at its most powerful, most quintessential. I was omniscient, omnipresent and infinite. The instant a question was raised, my universal mind had it answered on a level unheard of, guided by a universal wisdom, purpose and plan. When scientists finally probe into the last remaining mystery of the universe, this is what they will find, and nothing will translate into mathematics, formulas or concepts. All this is vanity. What is life? A thin membrane stretched over a river of ecstasy. Once pierced, your life will never be the same. I dared to raise a question. What is to become of me, the Creator? Just when I thought there could be no answer to my question, I heard new sounds rising from the stillness, like flutes opening a white infinite space before me with shapes and possibilities undefined. An invitation to manifest within realms unknown, with adventures still unrealized and untold. This is reality and truth. Man's true evolution begins here, in pure clarity, free of all illusion. The future path of man's destiny starts, 208 I hear, now, to enter dimensions yet incomprehensible and inaccessible, because man still carries the burden of his animal evolution and instincts to survive in a limited world. A few have stormed ahead to scout the way, to fathom what lies beyond. I knew I was only at the outer edges of creation and that beyond weighted dimensions too far beyond our human state of evolution. I could travel no further, because this was my true home. I was rocking gently to and fro to a celestial symphony, resting like a baby in its mother's arms, in total trust and surrender, listening to the heartbeat of creation, which rolled through me in waves of ecstasy. I felt I could take no more and feared that if I stayed on I would surrender my very consciousness and lose myself in the infinite ocean of pure joy. I did not want this. I had worked for many years to attain samadhi, and when it came I was unprepared. I had to return. I cannot say how long I was in this region. I felt sanctified. Everything about and around me was beautified. I felt whole, and holiness was a word which had attained its true meaning for me now. When I came round I was sitting on the bench in a large hall, still not in my physical body. My face rested in my hands. I was in a state of recovery, adjustment. My body convulsed with the after effects of this I experience. I tried to control them and get a grip of the thing I called myself. A curious entity thrown together with molecules and atoms, mined from eternity and infinity and endowed with a unit of consciousness which could call itself me. Now it was dressed again in ideas, protecting itself for whatever reason from the light of truth. I am. But what was this I am, separated from its true reality? It was nothing but a thought, a dream, an illusion. I became gradually aware of my surroundings and noticed a man sitting on another bench not far from me. He looked vaguely familiar, but I could not place him. "Have you been through that door?" he asked, pointing at a magnificent entrance to some other room. "You could not have," he said then, answering his own question. "I have been sitting and waiting here for years and years. You are not that advanced to go through that door." 209 I had little idea what he was talking about, but I guessed he meant the dimension I had just returned from, that heavenly realm he had been waiting to get into for so long. I looked at him. I had nothing to reply with, no words to say or think with. I still saw what I had seen behind my eyes, and my heart was struggling to adjust, still reeling in the aftermath of such bliss. There was nobody to convince, no tales to be told. No witness to bring forward. I knew that it was pointless to talk about it. I felt sorry for all those who may have tried, who fell victim to being misunderstood, their listeners mistaking them for saints, turning them into prophets and holy men. I wanted nothing to do with this and had no interest in convincing anybody. That which pulsated through my veins pulsated through everybody's. Each one of us is, in that regard, a saint, sanctified. Each one of us is blessed by our great heritage. I took peace and comfort in the fact that I was like everyone else. When I looked at the man in front of me, I wanted to say, "Don't wait and don't try, you are already there." He looked at me. Then I noticed other people, a group crowding around me, but it wasn't me they were crowding around, it was a man by my side, who I recognized as a master and a friend. It was he who had been with me and had escorted me into the dimension I had just returned from. He turned towards me and said chirpily, "It's time to go. Say goodbye to the chappie with the great golden key." I burst out laughing, because I realized he was referring to the mythological keeper of Heaven's Gate, Saint Peter of the Christian faith. I was happy to be human again. Other people in the group were laughing and making flippant, disrespectful, human comments. The great master made me appreciate how natural it was to enter into such a state. As our group went through the great hall, we passed gigantic tapestries. This was a true palace with huge arched ceilings and marbled floors and walls, but of such abundance and craftsmanship that they could only be fashioned in thought. People of our group were pointing and talking. After a while we passed enormous windows and I looked out into wide open country. We descended many flights of 210 I, when I woke up I was slumped over in my chair. I ran once again J through the events, without moving a muscle. The inside of my head felt like a brightly illuminated hall. I sat in total peace, reliving it all. There was a strong light right at the top of my skull. I smirked when the thought of a cartoon light bulb slipped into my mind. To see the light 7 is an expression we all take for granted, but why don't we remember what the light is? I relished the fact that what I had seen was real, not a dream. Finally, I got up out of my chair. It was just after 8 in the morning. Julia was still asleep, and she looked very peaceful. I peeked into my little daughter's room, where she lay nestled up in her cot. What a miracle creation is, I thought. I made tea. I got dressed. I felt different. There was a presence with me, which I had carried back into my world from that other dimension. It showed there was continuity to life, which spans all levels of consciousness. The presence was with me as I left the stairs. The master asked questions, but I was still too preoccupied with what I had seen to pay much attention to them. The next time I looked out of the window, I saw a sky covered with silver cloud. The atmosphere had become distinctly earthly. I could see numerous rivers snaking across the countryside, and many people working. I saw bulldozers and bizarre heavy machinery and wondered about the meaning of it all. The master noticed my puzzlement. He asked if I could explain what I was seeing. I said, "Judging by the clouds and the light in the sky and the use of such heavy machinery, I'd say we must be on a dimension very close to our Earth." The master laughed approvingly. It was strange that despite his familiarity and friendliness, I could not work out where I knew him from. Finally, we exited the building and the group dispersed. I watched the workmen having fun with their equipment by staging play fights, clashing their diggers against each other, yelling and laughing like schoolboys. I knew it was time to go back to my own familiar territory. I spent a few moments running through the events, knowing that without impressing them on my brain, all I had experienced would be lost. 211 House, when I crossed the road and walked to the nearby cricket ground. When I acknowledged the presence with a smile, it smiled back at me tenfold. I felt warmth and affection for it, and it responded with overwhelming love. I felt privileged to have been chosen to be alive, to continue to be allowed to live in a universe of such splendor. The presence was with me like a silent companion. It watched my every step. It walked with me, and everywhere I looked I saw it. it confirmed its reality. Every humble tree or object I looked at told me that it was true. The world had a wonderful symmetry. The songs of the birds blended harmoniously with the noise of a passing car and the slight breeze rustling the branches of the trees. My eyes naturally picked out repeating pattern on the tarmac of the path in front of me, reassembling it like a Persian carpet. This is a beautiful place, I thought, and as humans we are chosen to share it with its creator. Alas, our physical brain is a powerful organ, rooted firmly in our three-dimensional world. However lofty our experiences, they cannot stand their ground, in the harsh light of man-made reality, and soon my journal entry was filed under extraordinary experiences and left there for 25 RL years. It took all this time and regular deep meditation to coax this presence, subtly and gradually back into my life as a silent reality. Epilogue. What is reality? If some reputable scientists were to say, "I am very sorry, but you are mistaken. We have conclusive proof that what you experienced and what you have recorded in your journals is nothing more than one big illusion, a figment of your imagination," then my answer would probably be, "Thank you for telling me, I have suspected it myself for a long time now. But would you mind including my physical experiences as well?" One may wonder whether visits to, or visions of, other dimensions, like in the previous chapter, however real when experienced, hold any significance for our life in the physical reality at all. I suspect that they may, equals have a similar relevance as music and art has. It was a vision, an event in my life long gone, and yet it was nothing less than reality proper, reality in its essence. It is with me wherever I am. It proved to me that at the core of all experience lies an inner reality, which is pure and universal. But the most important realization is that one does not have to scale the highest mountain or zoom through multiple dimensions to find it. It is here with us now. The fact that we exist is proof enough. Reality is a strange thing, and as a species we have relationship with it. Yet it is the only thing that counts in life. You can divide the people who have a good grip on reality into four categories. They are either very rich, very successful or very happy, or all three of these. If we tune into reality, we acquire the best possible ways for survival by considering facts and the laws of nature, society, economy and all the other rules that govern our lives. Ironically though, however rich or 213 successful or happy we may be, if we don't grasp reality at its core, we still won't live in a real world and will most probably be left wanting more. We haven't arrived at the real wealth and the real success in our lives and consequently still feel lacking. Without a foundation in its essence, the reality we perceive is no more than a deception. A revolution is taking place, a paradigm shift in consciousness. Nature's way of digging us out of our hole is by shifting our universal awareness to a new level. Mankind is waking up to the reality at the core level to save itself from self-destruction. We are becoming aware of the present, the now, because it is here that we start controlling our world and our destiny as a species. The awakening to the reality of the present is a global phenomena. Mankind is rising from its dream. Nothing less than our survival is at stake. We are awakening from our madness of self-destruction and beginning to see who we really are and what creates our world. Until now we relied on beliefs and hearsay instead of awareness of what is in order to make sense of the world. Countless religions and belief systems have been created to serve us the truth like a ready-made dish. Once one meal has been consumed, then another one is served immediately, because our minds can never be satisfied. All theory, religion and philosophy has a limited shelf life. Beliefs are rigid and we have witnessed societies crumbled that were built on ideas. Scientific beliefs and hypotheses fare no better. The little we know is called quickly into question and is replaced by something more fundamental. But scientists, too, are awakening and beginning to realize that the ultimate truth or theory of everything cannot be found within the confines of an external reality, because the external world has long merged with our minds. This has turned out to be our great illusion, because we see ourselves divorced from the world. Scientists with fresh minds will soon begin to explore the next dimension from within them and then begin to dig a tunnel from both ends until the next dimension becomes our new frontier. New modes of operation are being deployed and they can only be found in the present. Nothing else is dynamic enough. Nothing else holds the power to unlock the great remaining mysteries. Until now we despaired when our beliefs crumbled in the face of reality, but soon we will see only our liberation. The present can't crumble. All we need to do is to surrender to its reality, the now. 214 We are discovering that the reason for our unhappiness is that we are out of touch with reality. We are beginning to redefine our lives in this complex world until it becomes simple and authentic. Adapting our strategies to be dynamic has become essential for our survival in the physical world, but most of all we are learning how to be in the present. We don't need books or any teachers to tell us how to wake up from our dreams in the morning, and we won't be needing books when we wake in our new consciousness. We will simply step into a new awareness of the present and realize that it was, is, always here. We are not cut-off cells, but constituent parts of a gigantic universal organism which always was, always is and always will be, because that is the very nature of the present, which is with us now. How can we not surrender to it? It is the greater part of us, tuned into our innermost nature, supporting us as we go about living. We can never be alone. Every moment is new. Every morning we get up is a new experience. There is no repetition. The present becomes our presence, our friend, a latent ecstasy ready to pour itself into our hearts at the slightest provocation. A space of infinite peace and inspiration. Some people who experience it choose to call it God. That's okay, because you don't need to believe in God any longer. If God does not present itself, then people call on faith or belief and only confirm their separation from it. Belief has no part of the new consciousness, experience and realization is taking its place. We are all standing at the platform waiting for our train to arrive to take us to the next dimension. All life is about death. Death is always lurking in the background. But because we are accustomed to seeing it as an end to life rather than a new beginning, we stare at it with trepidation and associate it the moment we submit to the present. Our new consciousness makes reality the most beautiful part of being human, and living in a physical dimension becomes a great privilege. We meet challenges with eagerness, keen to learn, to progress, to satisfy our need to pursue our potential, to adjust and to create for ourselves a beautiful and ever-changing world. We are facing up to reality as a training ground for our evolution. We have tired of trying to escape from it. We are realizing that our creeds have run their course and our escape strategies and our addiction to beliefs are shallow and empty. The end 215 with dread and fear. The Buddhist idea to a happy life is to embrace death every day with joyful anticipation, because in reality death is just another thing that happens on our long journey through eternal life. Every day we are moving closer towards the door, beyond which a new life of great adventure, new opportunities and mystery awaits us. Imagine a life without fear and full of joyful anticipation, where every day presents us with another opportunity to prepare ourselves for a greater life. All our dreams will come true, our greatest ambitions realized. The moment we allow joyful anticipation to rule our hearts and lives, we open ourselves to the present and breach the great divide. We don't even have to wait for our big day to arrive. It is here already, now, every moment. Fear is not part of it, only joy and the ecstasy of the moment. We have nothing to fear, because reality is eternal, timeless and limitless. When all our thoughts have taken their allocated places to serve and not to control us, only silence remains, and it will take us to our true home. By surrendering to the present, we will all realize our universal nature and become true multi-dimensional beings. Appendix Multi-Dimensional Model Multi-Dimensional Model. Between the Dimensions. The physical dimensions on the outside indicate there could be any number of physical universes. Ours is just one of the black dots. Please note the globular strings on the right, getting bigger as they reach down towards their original source. The underlying universes are massively larger than the physical one, which is only a minute fraction of the whole.